Welcome back. My name is Avi Heller, and together we're learning Masechet Megillah. We are on Daf Yud Bet Amud Bet, that's 12b. And this series of recordings is a project of the OU Department of Synagogue Services, OU Torah, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. We're at the very top of 12b, the second word in. The Megillah is continuing to darshan the first chapter of the Megillah. And we've come now to, we've already gone through Ahasuerus's party and through Vashti's party. Now comes the confrontation between Ahasuerus and Vashti. And it says in the Megillah, and it's the words on the top line, Bayom HaShvi'i, on the seventh day, so this is the last day of the seven-day party that the king threw in Shushan. Kitov Lev HaMelech Bayayin, when the king's heart was merry with wine. So the Gemara asks as follows: Atu ad hashta lo tav libe bechamra? You're telling me this is the first time that the king's heart was gladdened with wine? Ad hashta, until now, lo tav libe, his heart was not merry bechamra, with wine? Of course, I mean, he's been partying for 187 days already. It would seem like he would have been married before this time. So Amar Rava, Rava says, Yom HaShvi'i, the seventh day, doesn't just mean any seventh day or seventh day of the party, but Shabbat Hayah, it was Shabbos. She Yisrael Ochlin Vishotin. And the Jewish people on Shabbat, they eat and they drink. But before they eat and they drink, Matchilin B'divrei Torah, they begin with words of Torah, U'v'divrei Tishbachot, and with words of praise. You know, we sing Shalom Aleichem and Eshet Chayil, we say Kiddush. And Amotzi, we sanctify our meals with words of Torah and praise to Hashem. Aval Ovde Kochavim, but the idolaters, the worshippers of the constellations, She'ochlin v'shotin, when they eat and drink, Ein matchilin ela b'divrei tiflut. They don't begin except with words of tiflut. Tiflut's an interesting word, not 100% clear how to translate it, but it seems to mean some kind of thing that's either irrelevant or foolish. Okay, and it's not a good thing. V'chein b'su'udato shel oto rasha. So the same thing happened at the su'uda of that wicked guy, Ahasuerus. Halalu omrim, some of the people in the party were saying, midayot na'ot, Midian girls are the nicest girls. V'halalu omrim, and others were saying, parsio na'ot, the Persian girls are the most beautiful girls. You know, this was the argument they were having. Tastes great, less filling. Amar lahem Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus was waiting for this. So he says to them, Kli she'ani mishtamesh bo, the vessel that I use, eino lo midayai velo parsi, it is not a Median vessel nor a Persian vessel. Ela kazdi, it is a Kazdian vessel. And we learned earlier that Vashti was the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar. So Nebuchadnezzar was a Babylonian, but she ended up in the house of Belshazzar. According to the Midrash, it seems like Ahasuerus kidnapped her from Belshazzar's house. Belshazzar was the Kazdian king, so she is a Kazdian woman. So he set this up. He sets it up to them to say, oh, I have the most beautiful girl in the world. Ritzon chem lir ota, do you want to see her? Amru lo in. They said to him, yes, in here in Aramaic means yes. Yeah, we want to see her. Ubilvad shetehe aruma, but only if she's naked. That was their condition. Now, it's unclear if this is how Ahasuerus set it up or not. Maybe he wanted to just show her beauty and not show her naked, but that was what they said. And it sounds like Ahasuerus was only too happy to agree in his drunken state. So the Gemara now mentions a principle. It says, shebemida sheadam modedba, Modedinlo. The way, the measure that a man uses to measure is how he's measured. So the way in which a person behaves is sometimes cast back upon him. We call this mida keneged mida, one measure for another measure. So what Ahasuerus, what happens to Vashti is what we want to say here. It's actually not about Ahasuerus. What happens to Vashti is a fitting punishment for her based on the way she acted. How does that work? As follows. Milame, this teaches us, Shahaita Vashti Harisha'a, that wicked Vashti, Mevia Benot Yisrael, she would bring Jewish girls, Umafshitan Arumot, she would strip off all their clothes, and make them naked. Va'oseh bahen melacha b'Shabbat, and she would force them to do work on Shabbat while naked. So here the same thing happens to Vashti. The seventh day is Shabbat, as we said before. And here, because the people have requested to see the queen naked, Ahasuerus accedes to their request and is going to strip her naked, and therefore what she did to the Jewish girls will now be done to her. There's only one problem with this calculation, which is that it never actually happens. It doesn't happen to her. But we'll leave that aside for now. The next word here in the Gemara says hainu, but there is an emendation in the Bach, and he says that instead of the word hainu, it should say lefikach, therefore nigzar aleha b'Shabbat, therefore she was decreed on her on Shabbat, as is written. So the way the Bach reads it is that the part about being stripped naked was never actually carried out, but the fact that she was punished on Shabbat is the midah keneged midah. And here's the verse. Achar advarim ha'ela, after these matters, kishoch hamat ha'melech Achashverosh, when Achashverosh's anger died down, zachar Vashti v'et asher asata, he remembered Vashti and what she had done, v'et asher nigzar aleha, and what was decreed upon her. So what he says is, kishem she'asta, just as she did, v'et asher asata, kach nigzar aleha, et asher nigzar aleha. That's what was decreed upon her. So what she did to the Jewish girls is what was decreed upon her. Okay, we are two lines up in the skinny lines. The next phrase, when Ahasuerus now sends to bring Vashti to strip her naked and show her beauty off to the masses, vatma'ena malka Vashti, Vashti refuses. Now, we said earlier that Vashti's intentions in this party were licentious. She wanted to fool around with other men, and she had arranged it with Ahasuerus. So the Gemara is not sure what the problem is here. Why didn't Vashti want everyone to see how beautiful she was? Michti, let's see. Pritzata Havai, she was a pritzistic woman. She was a woman who was happy to flaunt her body at men. So why would she refuse to come? The Amar Mar, as Mar said, Shnehem Lidvar Averanit Kavnu. Both of them had intended to commit sexual acts with other people that night. I'm on the first wide line. My Taima, that's the abbreviation on the first wide line. What is the reason, Lo Atai, that she didn't come? This may be one of the most famous teachings in all of the Megillah for reasons which I don't totally understand, but it is true. Amar Rav Yossi Bar Chanina, Rav Yossi Bar Chanina said, Milame, this comes to teach us, Sheparcha Batzarat, that as Vashti was about to go appear in public, suddenly she broke out with tzarat, this kind of leprous white spots all over her body. B'matnita Tana, and in the other Mishnah, the other version of the Mishnah, it says, and we have here, Ba Gavriel v'asa la zanav. The angel Gabriel came and made a tail for her, kind of like Hagrid did to Dudley in the first book of Harry Potter, right? Made a tail for her. So that's also a very famous teaching, that these two reasons, that even though she would have been very happy to flaunt her nakedness in front of everyone, she was not happy to do it if she was physically disfigured. Really there was something wrong with Vashti. Of course, all of these things just set it up, so she refused, and then she was therefore punished by the king, which was really God's plan all along, that Vashti should be killed so that Esther could assume the queenship. Or perhaps the reason Vashti was killed, as we mentioned earlier, was as a punishment for Ahasuerus using the vessels of the Beit HaMikdash, since he thought that the 70 years of the exile were over and that God was not going to redeem the Jews. And so when he used the vessels of the Beit HaMikdash, Hashem allowed the Satan to come and to kill her. Maybe he should have killed Ahasuerus, but he actually killed Vashti. Okay, second wide line. Vayiktzof ha-melech ma'od. The king gets very upset that Vashti refuses to come to the party. So the Gemara asks, Amai, Dalka be kulehai. Why did he get so angry? Like, what set him off? Amar Rava. Rava says that it wasn't just that she refused, it's what she said. Shalchale, she sent him a message in which she insulted him. She said, Bar ahorar ahorayre. She said, you are just a stable hand. And we have this tradition that Ahasuerus was not from a royal family. Vashti had the aristocratic blood. He was an upstart. She's like, you were my father's stable boy. Abar Ahorayre the Abba, the stable master of my father. Abba Lakabel Alpha Chamre Shate Velo Rave. My father could drink 1,000 barrels of wine and not be satiated. Vahu Gavra, and this guy, my husband, Ishtate Bechamre Miyad, as soon as he drinks a little wine, he is laid out. So she both insulted his origins and his ability to hold his liquor. And this being insulted, being, you know, the word is being spurned and having his wife having contempt for him, that miyad immediately, ishtati b'chamra, he's laid out with his wine, miyad immediately v'chamato ba'arabo, his anger burned within him. That really, really upset him. Okay, so the king doesn't know what to do, and he doesn't know how to make his own decisions. So the next line in the Gemara says, in the Megillah, says, and I'm in the fifth wide line, Vayomer HaMelech LaChachamim, the king said to his wise men to seek counsel. What should he do with this Vashti who's refusing to come? So Gemara asks, Man Chachamim, who were these wise men? So they answer, of course, Rabbanan, the rabbis. He went to ask the rabbis what to do because they're smart. Yodei team, and then it describes them as people who know the times, who know the calendar, because the rabbis, sheyodim la'aber shanim, they knew how to when to add a leap year, v'likbo chadashim, and how to declare a new month and to set the calendar. So Amar lehu, Achashverosh says to the rabbis, dainuha li, he says, judge her for me. I'm going to take her to Beis Din. I'll take her to a Jewish court. You know, I as her husband and the king asked her to do something and she refused. I'll take her to Beit Din. Amro, so the rabbi said to themselves, Hechi Navid, how should we handle this? How shall we do this? Because they have a problem. They're now caught on the horns of a dilemma. Neimale kat kitala, if we tell him, kill her, that she's liable for death. Limachar pasik le chamre, tomorrow the wine will go out of him. Udkirla, that should be added. Those two words should be added, and he'll remember her. Ubaila minan, and then he'll request her from us. So he's not going to remember tomorrow when he sobers up that she was sentenced to die, and then he'll be angry at us for killing his queen. So that's problem number one. Nema le shavka, if we tell him, spare her, don't kill her. Kamizalzla b'malchuta, but she has disgraced the king, and the kingship, and that cannot stand. He's going to find out that we told him to spare her, even though she's embarrassed the whole kingdom, and then we'll be in trouble. So they basically see this as a lose-lose situation. So they demur. Amrulo, they say to him, Miyom Shecharav Ben HaMikdash, from the time that the Ben HaMikdash was destroyed, and remember, it's now 70 years since the first Ben HaMikdash was destroyed, V'galinu Me'artenu, and we were exiled from our land, Nitla Eitza Mimenu, the capacity for good judgment was taken from us, V'einanu Yodin Ladun Dinei Nefashot, and we do not have the expertise to judge matters of life and death. And this is a true halacha, or it certainly is true under many circumstances, that when there was no Sanhedrin, they no longer judged capital cases. I don't know if it was true in this era or not. I don't know if they are dissembling or if they're telling him the truth, but they didn't want to judge Vashti. So they gave him an alternative, which any good rabbi will do if he doesn't want to answer the shaila. Zil legabe Amon u'Moav. Go to the wise men of Amon and Moav, our cousins, diyatve biduchtaihu, that they are dwelling in their places. Diyatve, that they are dwelling, biduchtaihu, in their places, in their lands. Kichamra, like wine, diyativ al durdia, that is sitting on its lees, on its dregs. It's a wine that's in its original container, so it's a stronger wine. And what they mean is, we've been exiled from our land, we have sort of lost our stability, and we don't want to judge your case. But Amon and Moab have not been exiled from their land. They're sitting in their ancestral homelands. They're very safe and secure, and that their capacity for judgment will be stronger than ours. The Taima Amrule, and they gave the reason, as it says in this following verse, which is the verse from Jeremiah, Yirmiyahu Perek Memchet Pasuk Yudbet 48:12. Sha'anan Moav Minu Rav. Moav is settled see if that's the word they use, is at ease from his youth, v'shoketu el shmarav, and he is placid in his watch, v'lo hu rak mikeli el keli, mikli el keli, and he has not been poured from vessel to vessel. This is the imagery of the wine being in its original container, but it's also the idea of that they haven't been exiled from their land, kicked from one place to another. Uvagula lo halach, and into exile they have not gone. Al kain, therefore, amad ta'amo bo, their taste remains as it always was. Verecho lo namar, and its aroma has not evaporated. So the rabbis demur, and they send the shaila over to Amon and Moav. Okay, so what happens? Miad, immediately Achashverosh goes to his advisors. Now, I don't know if these are Amon advisors and Moav advisors. They seem to be Persian advisors. But he goes immediately, the Akarov Elav, the closest advisors to him, and he mentions a bunch of them. Karshina, Shetar, Admata, Tarshish, Meres, Marsina, and Memuchan. It doesn't list all of them here in the Gemara, but it's going to discuss all of them. So there are seven advisors that he turns to. Amar Rabbi Levi. Rabbi Levi says, Kol Pasuk Zeh, this whole verse, all of these random Persian names in the Megillah, Al Shum Karbanot Ne'amar, they're all referring to the sacrifices in the Bein HaMikdash. And he's going to explain each one. The first advisor's name is Karshina. So that is a code word for something in the Bein HaMikdash. And here's how the Gemara explains it. Amru malachei asharet lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the ministering angels say before Hashem, the Holy One, blessed be He. They say, Ribono shel Olam. That's the beginning of the line, that abbreviation, Resh Bet Shin Ayin. Ribono shel Olam, Master of the Universe. Klum hikrivu lifanecha karim b'nei shana. Has anyone else offered before you bullocks that are a year old, kiderach shehikrivu Yisrael, the way that the Jewish people offered sacrifices before you, the Yisrael lefanecha, before you. So what you have here is he's actually turning to these Persian or Amon and Moab advisors to give him advice, but the person who's really giving him advice are his own malachim, his own angels, and they are giving him the advice that he should look out for the welfare of the Jewish people. They're giving this advice to Hashem, I guess, but in some way they're whispering in the ear of Achashverosh too, or maybe they're telling Hashem and then Hashem is influencing Achashverosh. I'm not sure. Okay, the next advisor's name is Shetar, and they understand this as Klum hikrivu lefanecha shtei torin. The word Shetar is like a shortened version of shtei torin, two turtle doves, two birds. So has anyone offered two turtle doves the way the Jewish people did in the Bein HaMikdash? Admata is the next advisor. Klum banu lefanecha mizbeach adama. Did anyone build an earthen altar the way the Jewish people built it for you? So admata refers to the word adama, the earthen altar. The next advisor's name is Tarshish, which is also the name of a city, right? Tarsus. But they understand it as klum shimshu lefanecha bevigde kehuna. Has anyone served before you in the clothing of the priesthood the way the Jewish people did? So Tarshish is related to the word shimshu, that they served before you. Dichtiv behu, as it is written, Tarshish v'shoham v'yashvei. These are the stones that were set in the high priest breastplate. So Tarshish is maybe an emerald. Shoham is a certain kind of a stone. It's called a Shoham stone. The Yashvei is maybe is a jade stone. So these were stones that were in the high priest breastplate. In other words, it's referring to the clothing of the Kohanim. Next line. The next advisor's name is Meres. So the angels continue to speak to Hashem. Klum mirsu bidam lefanecha. Has anyone been so careful with the blood before you? So limares means to stir the blood so that it doesn't congeal. You don't want the blood to congeal after the shechita. So they had to have one of the kohanim would stir the blood. So was anyone so careful to make sure that the blood never congealed as the Jewish people? And Marsina is the next advisor, which sounds a lot like Meres. Meres and Marsina, they sound like brothers. So they understand the second one is klum mirsu b'menachot lefanecha. Did anyone stir the flour offerings? You had to mix the flour and the water and together, the way the Jewish people did. And finally, Memuchan, the seventh advisor, his name was Memuchan, klum hechinu shulchan lefanecha. Did anyone set the table of bread before you, like the Jewish people did? Memuchan then comes from the word of lehachin, to prepare. So it identifies all seven of these advisors as code words that the angels were trying to get Hashem to remember the Beit HaMikdash and to have mercy on the Jewish people. It's just interesting that the last one there we mentioned was the showbread, but it doesn't mention anything about the menorah, and I do not know why. Okay, so Ahasuerus turns to his seven advisors. Of the seven advisors, only one of them speaks up, and that is the next line. Vayomer Memuchan. Memuchan gives his advice about what Ahasuerus should do. Tana, we have a teaching, Memuchan ze Haman, that this advisor Memuchan is really Haman. Now Haman hasn't yet become as powerful as he's going to become. Actually, he's the seventh advisor, which means he's lowest down on the totem pole. So if his name is really Haman, why does it call him Memuchan? V'lama nikra shemo Memuchan, shemuchan lepuranut, that Haman was set up for suffering. Now it's a little bit ambiguous here in what way Haman is set up for suffering. Is it the suffering of Haman? And that's how Rashi understands it. That from the beginning, Haman was ready for trouble, and it was just things had to happen at the right pace for him to get hung on the gallows, but he was ready for it from the beginning. Or does it mean the suffering of others, that Haman was set up to make other people suffer, and from the very beginning, all he did was make trouble for other people? And that, I think, is how the Maharsha understands it. Last teaching here, Amar Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana said, "Mikan shehedyot kofetz barosh." What we learn here from Memuchan is that sometimes the person lowest down jumps up to the head of the line, because we see that Memuchan was the seventh advisor; he was the lowest down on the totem pole, but he's the one who spoke up, so he jumped to the head of the line. And it's a little unclear whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. In some ways, it seems like it would be a bold step to take advantage. On the other hand, it's kind of an arrogant and unfair trick to jump ahead of everyone else. So in the context of Haman, here he was also an upstart who jumped ahead of everyone else for his own self-aggrandizement. We are going to stop there, just four lines up, the end of the fourth line up of the skinny lines, and we'll continue in our next recording. Have a wonderful day.